August 3rd between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. For more information, visit utown.udc.ca/pride. August 3rd, our waves are going full spectrum rainbow. Tune in to CITR 101.9 FM or stream online at CITR.ca for full spectrum rainbow waves. 8 hours of pride-themed programming from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Featuring music from Devours, conversations on coming out stories from bisexual, pansexual, queer, and trans folks, the changing nature of queer media in Vancouver, the last Dyke Bar, and much more content. Happy Pride to all our listeners.
Right now on Rainbow Waves, I have a piece for you by Lyra McKee, who is a member of CITR's Gender Empowerment Collective. She has contributed to their collective show Babe Waves many times and is actively involved this summer. So this is her episode about poetry on CITR 101.9 FM.
Hello, Vancouver. You're listening to CITR 101.9, located on the ancestral and unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. This episode is airing as a part of Rainbow Waves, special programming for Pride 2017. I'm your host, Lyra, and today we're going to be talking about the meaning of poetry and spoken word in the lives of trans and non-binary people as a source of resistance, empowerment, and self-determination. Because we are so often silenced or spoken for rather than being allowed to share our feelings and experiences, I found that trans and non-binary people often find emotional release and community in the writing and performing of spoken word poetry. I want to use this episode to explore the relationship between gender identity and nonconformity and poetic expression. First, let's set up a working glossary for our audience of some of the terms we'll be using on the show. By gender identity, I mean the category with which a person identifies according to gender as it is enacted and experienced in society, rather than the sex they were assigned at birth. Some examples of gender identities include man, woman, non-binary, and gender fluid. Within the gender identities of woman and man, there are also the categories of cisgender and transgender. Cisgender means that your gender identity lines up with your sex assigned at birth according to traditional social expectations and requirements, whereas transgender implies that one's gender crosses those norms in relation to their sex assigned at birth. As a transgender woman, I experience both misogyny, or the structural violence that privileges men over women, and transphobia, which is the socially ingrained hatred of and prejudice against trans people. This specific combination of oppressions has been named transmisogyny, a portmanteau coined by Julia Serrano in her book, Whipping Girl. Now that we've gone over the requisite introduction to trans studies, let's listen to a song by Shay Diamond that was featured in Time magazine last year, and whose lyrics portray her experience of transmisogyny and racism as a black trans woman in the United States. Here's Shay's debut single, I Am Her.
If you had to wear my shoes, you'd probably take them off too.
And problems that I go through, sometimes I can't. things to be nice.
If I hide my face, heaven would be, it wouldn't be the worst thing that I ever did. It's a hell of a world that we're living in. James 2:10, a sin is a sin. Don't look at me, the needy me, and whisper behind my back thinking I'm not. And even I can believe there's an outcast in everybody's life, and I am her. There's a dark cloud in everybody's sunlight, and I am her. There's a shadow in everybody's front door, and I am her.
Sexual Assault Support Center, the SASC, is a free and confidential service which provides support to those who have experienced sexual assault, intimate partner violence and harassment. We provide services to folks of all genders, including students, staff, faculty and those who have a connection to the UBC Vancouver campus. We provide crisis and short-term emotional support, legal, medical and campus-related advocacy and outreach and educational programs. We are located in the Student Nest, room 3127. For more information on our hours of operation and other resources and services, please go to our website, amssask.ca, or visit our Facebook page, AMS Sexual Assault Support Centre.
Now we're going to hear from my friend Rachel about their relationship to gender and poetry. Can you start off by letting us know your gender identity and a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Lyra. In terms of my gender identity, I identify as non-binary, gender non-conforming, and also agender. And I use the pronouns they, them, and theirs. And that is my gender identity in a nutshell.
Cool. Thanks. And do you feel like your poetry reflects how you identify with gender at times, or could you talk a little bit about how your gender is reflected in your poetry?
Yeah, for sure. I think that for me, you know, as somebody who was raised in girlhood, if you will, I didn't really know at the time what I was feeling. Or maybe a better way to put it, I didn't know how to define the feelings that I had around that upbringing. And now that I have more words for those experiences and I'm able to reflect upon those experiences, I like to write poetry about it to make sense of it. And it helps me affirm that that's not something that I identify with anymore, and that's not a gender that, like, suits me anymore. And I think that that encapsulates most of my poetic experience. I've yet to explore more of where I'm currently at in terms of my gender identity and writing poetry around that. I think I haven't done so much of that because I'm still unpacking everything from, like, my childhood and the past. And I don't think I'm quite done with that yet. So I think that most of the poetry I write that, like, is related to gender is a lot about my own personal history and what I think about that now and how I feel about that.
Cool. Thanks. I think that totally makes a lot of sense. I think even different gender identities, in terms of gender nonconformity, like, I'm a trans woman. I don't identify as agender or non-binary, but I sort of feel the same way in terms of that, looking back into the past and examining that experience through poetry. So thanks for sharing. And would you like to share some of your poetry now?
Yeah, for sure. So this first poem that I have, it doesn't have a title, and it's quite short, but it's a little bit, yeah, it's more about where I'm at in terms of gender now versus looking backwards. And I have one where it's more about looking backwards. Yeah. Transgender as transcendence from the binary. Imagine me, strapped in a spaceship, ready to fly, blast off into the yawning galaxy of gender fuckery. I float every day in a strange that I can explore. Not a strange that will swallow me whole, but some days it does, and I get eaten alive. And in those times of turbulence, I remind myself, hold on for the ride.
Thanks. Snaps.
Thank you. And then this next poem is actually specific to growing up in, like I mentioned, like in girlhood, but also pertaining to my experiences of being racialized as well, and those things in combination, and really not liking that or not appreciating the experiences attached to that particular gender, and then with my, like, race attached to it as, like, an Asian person, an East Asian person, the kind of narratives surrounding essentially, like, East Asian women and what that means. And so, you know, looking back now, I realize that there are a lot of aspects of that combination of, you know, gender and race that I didn't appreciate and I was really tired of. So this is me reflecting upon that experience. China doll. He said, come here, my China doll, you're just my type. My China doll, can I buy you a drink? It didn't matter, I wasn't flattered. He insisted. But before I could say, I'm not sure, he stuffed sweet sentiments down my throat. You beautiful little thing, you dainty, delicate blossom. My gag reflex acted up and I hurled, listen, I'm not your China doll. I'm no doll. My name is Lau Hole, right? Say it, that's my name. Man with large teeth and smooth tongue, try to wrap your tongue around my name because it isn't China doll. My limbs are not made of glass, not appendages attached to frail body. My limbs are made for fighting. Hear the chink, chink, chink of my arms escaping your colonial chains. I'm not made for your trophy case, not some prized possession for you to display next to your fine china plates. I'm made to move. I'm made to shake 200 years of self-hate built up on my skin. They call me the yellow peril. And if you dare, call me China doll again.
Thanks. So it seems like poetry maybe is not only a way for you to pull apart all these different gendered meanings that you grew up with and the ways that it intersects with racialization, but also as a way to sort of rebel against imputed meanings and things that have been pushed on you that you don't agree with or identify with.
Yeah, and in relation to my poetry and these gendered meanings and gender expectations, I think identifying as a non-binary person and choosing to write poetry and performing poetry, I'm able to exist in the space where there aren't those expectations of what a man should be when they write poetry or like what a woman should be when she writes poetry. It's just like, I'm just writing poetry and you don't have any template for how you can gender me in this. So I can write it however I want and I can say it however I want and I can feel good about that without worrying that someone is going to attach a certain set of expectations or critiques or criticisms, if you will, onto what I'm doing in my poetry.
Now that we've heard from Rachel about their poetry and non-binary identity, I thought I would read one of my poems that I wrote earlier this year when I was going through a lot of different things. I was physically sick. I had some mental health issues. And I was dealing with a lot of the negative aspects of living as a trans woman in modern day society. So here it is. My poems are scattered, much like my love. Writings on walls, words on pages, feet in mouths, planes in paper, sticks in mud, blood in bags, fluid in receptacles. What's in a name? Stars, cards, kinks, dates, debts, tears, blood, passion, history, destiny, relations. Girls don't, boys do. We say, run faster, save longer, do better, be okay. Love your body, hate the state, never forget, always forgive. I want, desire, foster, scream, let us be. I think that poetry can be useful in giving people a glimpse of what it's like to be gender nonconforming, even if someone doesn't understand everything that I'm saying in my poem or everything about my identity. It can give a glimpse into the feelings and emotions that emerge when you exist in society as I do. Once again, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, located on the unceded ancestral lands of the Musqueam people. And this is a special episode of Rainbow Waves programming for Pride 2017. I'm here with Dr. Marianne Saunders, and today we're going to talk about trans studies and being transgender in higher education. So first of all, could you please tell us a little bit about your education and your research?
Yeah, sure. So I started my university education in 1985. I did an undergraduate degree in English literature and drama. And at that time, I was really interested in Elizabethan literature, Shakespeare, and the poets of that period, which is what I did a master's degree on. And I took a break from that for several years. And when I went back to university to do a PhD in 1999, which I started here at UBC at that time, my interests had really shifted, and I was wanting to do my work on the way trans people are represented in literature. And at that time, I didn't really think of myself as transgender. My own gender transition didn't come until much later. But this was something I was really interested in. And it was... And it was interesting at that time, kind of in the early 2000s, I wasn't really conscious of this thing that we now call trans studies. It was sort of there and sort of not. And I had to kind of put together a committee of people who were sort of interested in and sympathetic to what I wanted to do, but who weren't really themselves in any way experts in this area. So that was a really, I was feeling my way, which in some ways I'm really grateful for because it gave me a lot of latitude. And in the end, my dissertation ended up being about trans representation in fiction, the discourse of fiction, but also in medical discourse. And I started from the Cold War and came through to the early 21st century, reading the medical discourse off against the way trans people had been represented in fiction over those decades as well. At that time, I wasn't aware of any fiction written by trans authors, so that's been a big change since I finished my PhD, is that kind of blossoming that we've had of fiction by trans authors. And my current research, the things that I'm working on right now are actually quite different from that. I'm doing a few projects with some of my colleagues. I teach in a few different areas at UBC. I teach in the Department of English, but I also teach in the Art Studies in Research and Writing, who do all of the first-year academic writing courses for students in the Faculty of Arts. And my unsuspecting first-year students find out when they get there that they're doing a course we're teaching students first-year students what it means to be people who participate in research culture. And I use trans studies as the kind of the focus for the research culture that we're investigating. And so they're always really surprised that this is what they're working on. But some of my colleagues in that program are experts in writing and discourse studies. And so right now, the research that I'm working on in collaboration with a couple of my other colleagues in that area is research about kind of the uses of trans studies in first-year writing classrooms, how that shapes how first-year students take up a sense of themselves as researchers or as people who belong to a research community. We're doing work on the ways that trans scholars use citation as a kind of a community-building tool, making decisions about who they're going to cite and how they cite them, how they represent other trans scholars in their own writing. So that's the stuff I'm working on right now.
Great, thank you. And you recently taught the first trans studies course at UBC, is that correct?
That is correct.
So that's it.
And I'll be teaching it again next year.
Great, great. And it's in the through the Critical Studies and Sexuality program, right? So could you talk a little bit about what it was like to teach the first trans studies course?
Terrifying. it really was. It was. I was going in, I know lots of trans scholars and have access to lots of different syllabi that people have been using over the past decade or so in other institutions teaching trans studies courses. But it was pretty daunting having to develop my own syllabus within the intersectional framework that the work over at, because CSIS is housed within, Critical Studies in Sexuality is housed within the gender, race, sexuality,
Social justice.
I was the institute, and coming up with a syllabus that was intersectional in its focus, but had kind of a breadth of coverage, both historically and contemporary, and sort of contemporary movements or interests in trans studies, and one that was inclusive of of, you know, trans scholarship of color and of sort of indigenous and two-spirit scholarship and representation and so on was just, it was really daunting. And it was, you know, I was really conscious of how one course is not enough. You know, we kind of need one that's history and one that's kind of current issues and one that's, you know, all kinds of, but we have one course, so that's what we work with. So it was, so that was part of what was daunting about it. And then the other thing that I wasn't quite expecting was the, and I wasn't really expecting it because I, well, because I had thought there was a prerequisite for the course, and it turns out that the prerequisite was a soft prerequisite. So that means that people can take that class if they want to, but they don't have to. I don't think it's a first-year intro to intersectionality. But a lot of the students coming into that course didn't have that, and they didn't have that background. And the students who were coming in from working within GRSJ, those students tend to be people who are kind of very well informed, kind of on the level of theoretical level and within activist communities and so on. But then we also had students coming from places like nursing or education who and other locations as well, who don't have that background and who were wanting to just learn learn about kind of trans scholarship, trans lives, and so on, and coming in with, in many ways, really different, different backgrounds, potentially different needs, and it was quite challenging at times to find a balance between the different needs of all of the different students in the classroom, keeping in mind that. And of course, there were quite a few trans-identified students in that class as well, keeping in mind all of the different kinds of possible tensions that could arise in that situation. So it was a really challenging course to teach. I think it's probably the most challenging course I have ever taught, actually, for those reasons and others as well. And I'm really looking forward to having another kick at the can next year, because there are so many things that I think I would, that I will choose to do differently, knowing now what I know that I didn't know before.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it's going to be continued.
Yeah,
that's great.
Me too. Yeah. It's a really important course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess zooming out, I was hoping maybe we could talk a little bit about being trans women in academia and what that means or how it impacts experiences in academia, because I'm also a graduate student and a trans woman, and I've noticed that there's some, I've personally had some difficulties in academia related to being trans, but yeah. I thought we could just talk about that. What it means, what it's like, what do you think?
Yeah. You know, it's just in a general sense, right? It is challenging to be a trans woman in the academy, right? And for a lot of the same reasons that it's challenging to be a trans woman in general. The ways in which we can be, aren't necessarily, but can be sidelined or marginalized, both because we're women and because we're trans, and the way those two things intersect to create more of a sense of, you know, being outside of the power structures of the university. My own experience, though, has been actually pretty positive, and I think there are a few reasons for that. One is that one is that I was already well established within both art studies and research and writing and in the English department, the two units that I had been teaching in, as a valued colleague in those programs. And in particular, I think that's true in ASRW, Art Studies, but also in the English department. But it's a big department, so it's easier to get lost and not be seen there. And in general, people liked me, and then I transitioned, and kind of the friendliness and the goodwill that I already enjoyed amongst my colleagues kind of came with me. But I think it would have been really different had I been at the beginning of my career a trans woman, and I didn't know anyone, and nobody knew who I was. I think that's a really different kind of experience. I know that's a really different kind of experience. Some things that have been really a great pleasure for me to learn, which I hadn't really been aware of, is the ways in which, and I've had a few experiences of this, the ways in which women in the academy mentor other women, particularly women who are earlier in their careers. And I'm a sessional instructor, so in many ways I'm kind of, I'm not tenured faculty. But I've had the great pleasure of suddenly finding myself being understood differently by the women who I've been working with for years or been associated with for years, but who have started to mentor me in ways that I had never been mentored before, certainly never mentored when people perceived me to be a male scholar. So that's been actually, I felt really fortunate that that's been my experience. Yeah.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
And so you were working on trans studies before it was a big thing and before you transitioned.
Even. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've always been doing that, and it was really, that was an interesting experience, because I would be teaching these first-year courses, and I started teaching trans materials in 2008, because I finished my PhD early in 2007, and then I started teaching in 2008, And I would get students coming to me and saying, you know, this is interesting material to be studying, but why are you so interested in it, kind of thing? What is this man doing teaching this material, right? And I was always the answer, and I was always kind of not sure how to answer that, you know, and I would be like, you know, my own gender is a little, you know, I don't know, flexible, you know, it was just like, so that was a really interesting, interesting is the wrong word, but it made me acutely conscious of, the expectation that people have, if you're going to be working in a kind of an area of minority scholarship, if you like, the expectation that people have that somehow you have some kind of personal investment or identity-related investment in that. And so I was a bit of a mystery to those students who couldn't figure out why I would want to work on this material. It makes more sense to them now. The other thing that I wouldn't mind mentioning a little bit about in relation to my teaching is I'd like to tell you about a couple of courses that I'm teaching next year in addition to the trans studies course. These are both courses that I'm teaching in the English department. One is a children's literature course, and children's literature is another one of my kind of areas of research interests research interest and teaching. And it's a course that I've called Lost in the Margins, and it focuses on texts about children and young people who are marginalized in one way or another. Specifically, we'll be reading and studying texts by about trans and gender diverse children, about children and young people with disabilities, and texts about Indigenous young people. And it's an interesting range of texts that I've selected, from historical ones to contemporary ones, where the historical ones tend to be written by people for whom these, I guess, these identity categories are not personal, don't arise out of personal experience, through to very recent books where the authors are trans, or the authors are people with disabilities, or the authors are Indigenous, and sort of getting a sense of the development of that kind of discourse and representation of young people. And the other one is a course that I'm going to be teaching in the English department in the second term. The children's literature course is in first term, and this one's